Our first episode's horrendously rushed because I needed to go for tea. I would just call it Forest Universe. I want to go to Forest when I was like talking about the University of Nottingham.
Hi, I'm Erin Velak, and I've made it my mission to interview the members of the University of Nottingham's student radio station, URN. Join me to uncover how our members got into student radio, what they're listening to in their free time, and their most iconic pieces of clothing that might make you recognise them as you're walking around campus. I want to know who they are when the mics aren't live, so let's find out. This is Off Air with URN. Hello everybody and welcome to the 10th episode special with the wonderful Dominic Allen.
I'm wonderful.
You're wonderful.
Thank you so much. I feel wonderful. That's a little reference to the Bonita Bonita reel, which you absolutely love.
The TikTok.
The TikTok.
So you are URN's current head of finance and promotion.
Yes.
You have previously been head of sport.
NSTV's current head of sport.
Yeah, and you're just a big, big part of the station.
Well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you. I host various sports podcast, do a daytime show, and big fan of Eco Frenzy and the podcast. I love this podcast so much. I must be one of the few people who's like listen to loads of them. I think I'm one or two off doing all of them now, but I absolutely love it. So I'm really
excited. Surprised. We've got a little bit of a listener.
Have you got a bit of a cult following?
Yeah, just good a little bit.
Oh, I'm really proud because you deserve it. It's been really good to listen.
So yeah, let's start with where I like to start with everybody.
The start.
How did you get into radio? How did you join URN?
So do you want the long form or the short form? Because I know there's been a bit of difference. So what would you prefer? What would the listeners think? Like, do you want like the backstory of when I was a kid or how I joined URN?
Bit of both.
Okay.
Start where you want to start.
Okay, I'll start with. I joined URN because I really wanted to get into sports broadcasting. I came around on an open day when I was meant to be doing a school sports day. The day after I failed a driving test because I went to the wrong driving theory centre, which was a barrel of laughs, which my family still remind me of. So I was feeling a bit low, financially a bit short of because I'd just spent 50 quid not on a test that didn't happen. So I needed something to cheer me up. Looked at the radio station. Within a second, I realised this was the place to be. They just had the refurbishment. James Aldred, who was about to be the next head of sport, just said, look, you can do a podcast on whatever you'd like. And talked about Forest, talked about lower league football. And I was like, right, this is for me. I wanted to get into sports broadcasting because at a very young age, I realised I wasn't very good at football or cricket. I was okay at cricket. Got into district level. Don't want to brag.
What does district level mean?
So I played for the City of Bristol. But as you know, it's very rare that a city has a team and it's county. So it goes village level, club cricket, district level, county,
okay,
regional,
yeah.
England. I was very low on the district level. But I think that's the wonderful thing about cricket is you can just get involved in so many ways and talking about the game and really inspired me. But the one moment I realised I wanted to go into radio specifically was Liverpool 3, Arsenal 4 in about 2008. Andre Arshavin, the guy they based the meerkat off for Compare the Meerkat, that guy, that's not even a joke. He was on fire and it was a little past my bedtime. I really liked him because he was small and I was quite small for my age. And Dad was like, right, go to bed and you can listen to the radio. I was like, how's that going to work? I won't be able to see. It's like, now this is the genius of radio. They'll explain it to you what's happening. And I just remember it was an absolute thrilling night. And I remember, because the radio's always 10 seconds ahead of the TV, running down the stairs in my pyjamas, going, Dad, Dad, Arsenal have scored again. I'm not even an Arsenal fan. I'm probably a nominal Liverpool fan in that match. But I just remember the commentary being so exciting. And from then on, just absolutely loving radio, whether it be the cricket, a lot of that, sort of driving around Suffolk on holiday, listening to Test Match Special, or football on the way back from hockey games. It's just always been a part of my life, and it was just what I wanted to do.
Lovely. Well, that's a very... I'm breaking things. It's a very, very sweet story. So it started back a long, long, long time ago.
Yeah.
And so that's obviously when you realised you enjoyed listening to it. Mm. What made you... Was it on your radar to... how do I say this? Was it on your radar to join and do sports broadcasting before you saw the URN studios?
Oh, yeah. I, in year 10, had asked an editor of a magazine, should I do journalism? And he was like, God, no. Go do a proper degree, as he said, and did history. And it was like, how do I get into that zone? Because I love sports. Simply put, if anyone spent 5 minutes in my company, we'll have either talked about World War II, war films, the MCU, or most normally, sport, or the past, just brackets general, the past. I love sport, and it was always, how can I be professional at sport? And I realised it wasn't going to be an athlete. I tried my hand at umpiring, was rubbish. Tried refereeing, was rubbish.
That's really interesting, considering your constant criticism of referees.
Well, because they're rubbish. I think I'll do a better job.
Says a lot, does it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, well, we're not getting into that. That's for a different podcast. But I just wanted to be involved in sport in any way. I know I'd always been chatty. My parents had always brought me up to look people in the eye when I'm talking to them. Very like social family, even though my dad would much rather be not on his own. He'd like to sit in silence watching the telly like with a whiskey. That's the gym. But I think we always been very social, always had friends and family around, always being like talking to people. And I think that sort of rubs off and you go, oh, I actually got a gift of the gab here a little bit. I'm not phenomenally like, I've got a mate, Burn, who has the gift of the gab.
I will say, I will plug your podcast here, Nonsense Football.
Yeah.
And my favourite thing is, no matter what Burn's take is, because the way the podcast is structured is there are four of you and you kind of have one big debate topic and everyone comes in with who they're going to argue is like the best manager currently, or who would be England's number one striker, you know, something like that. And you all pick a player and then you argue it out. And it's a really good podcast. I would really recommend.
Oh, thank you.
And it is funny that every time Burn seems to win because he's just good at arguing.
Yeah, he'd be great at radio. But that I've always known, like we always would have good debates. We'd always talk a lot. I've always talked to teachers about sport. And I just thought, I'd love to be Motson. I'd love to be, who would it have been? David Gower or Ian Botham, which is really weird. Not when they were playing for England. Yeah. I like it when they're pitch side holding a microphone and going, well, I thought Andrew Strauss looked a bit weak in the middle order there. That's what I just loved. I just thought you get to watch cricket, watch American football, watch football for free. And I was a sports obsessed kid. I used to play golf by myself. I used to play cricket by myself. But what I'd do is I'd commentate on myself. And I'd organise it so it'd be like the commentary teams, because I was quite good at impressions as a kid and do lots of accents. Mm. I would change it so after a few overs, after throwing the ball against the wall and playing cricket against myself, a new commentary team would come in. And a new commentary team would come in and then I'd score it. And yeah, so I think I'd always just, there wasn't like a defining moment. I've always just been doing it.
You've always just been talking and playing sport basically. And then you realised, actually this is quite fun. Yeah. That's the plan for the future, isn't it?
Hopefully, yeah. It's what I love, and I've worked really hard, like trying everything I can. And I remember in sixth form creating my own articles and like making my own website of just my stupid little articles, which are rubbish looking back, but they're how you grow. And I've still got like a big file of the 50 greatest moments of 2018 World Cup. So not even that young. And it was me going through the 2018 World Cup and making 50 moments and then ranking them all, writing a little thing about it, getting a picture and like a little magazine. And I remember just treasuring that because I was like, that's me. That's what I printed. And it's rubbish, but that was something I was really proud of.
It was a big achievement.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not. And I'm not sure if you've ever seen it. The pictures are so grainy. The writing's all over the place. It's not been edited. But I love writing. I can't edit. I can't edit for heck, as I'll say.
This is why you and I work well together.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the editor.
Yeah, you are. I'm the person who paces. You're the person who writes.
Yeah, as we have had that experience. You're the ideas man. I'm the let's make it happen person.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, I enjoy that.
I love it.
It's a very sweet story. It's very nice that to know that it's been a long time coming. It's not a new passion. But more recently, you've branched out into the other types of student media. So, been doing your own since your first year. And I do want to get on to talking about like sticky wickets and things like that in a minute. But I wanted to branch out firstly and talk about how you've moved into now being a part of Impact and being head of sport at NSTV. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like?
So, I wanted to diversify my portfolio, which sounds so sort of London-centric. I wanted to diversify my portfolio. I realised I was very much down one route I wanted to just have different forms of creativity, which sounds, again, not what I am, but it sort of is what I am. I wanted to be creative in a different way. NSTV essentially roped me in. They were like...
They recruited you.
Yeah, they were like, we need a head of sport. You were head of sport last year. Could you help do a job?
And yeah, you started hanging around the TV people, being friends with them. I was your way in.
You were my way in. So was Joe Banks, and Lily Conroy was also an NSTV girl. She was very keen to like get me in and like have someone to work with for NSTV. They've all been wonderful, and it's been so nice to have a little bit of something new. I wanted a challenge. Sounds a bit, again, I don't want to come across as really like over professional. I just wanted something a bit new, a bit something fun.
No, but it's fair, because as we're saying, you've done the same thing for 2 years. Mm. In your third year, you're looking to take things a bit more seriously, and you're looking to diversify, as you say, your portfolio. And I think that is exactly the right way of phrasing it, and it doesn't sound bad at all.
I think it's just for me, I don't want to come across as overly artsy. I think as someone who likes football, who likes cricket, who hated art,
you have been described as bloke cool.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of me that never wants to be seen as pretentious. And I always, there's a part of me like the sort of, you know, the media type, like sort of, you know, that sort of person who you expect to be in radio. Very up themselves, don't really care about anyone else.
I get what you mean. We do like to talk about stereotypes here, and I think you're talking about what we like to call an after darker.
No, not just
an after darker, but like very maybe pretentious in their music taste. Like, oh, you haven't heard of this person kind of thing. A little bit of snobbery around music. And
but more
like,
I don't want anyone to think because I've hosted varsity ice hockey on NSTV, I don't want to be interested in the cameras or the production behind it. I don't ever want to be seen as talent with inverted commas.
You don't want to be the talent.
The talent. I think growing up playing a lot of team sports, you learn you have to be amazing for that. And I know I'm not amazing. And also, when you're ginger and chubby as I was, you learn to have quite a thick skin, and you learn you've got to be nice to everyone. You don't, because obviously growing up in club cricket, you get a little bit stick. And then when you get to 13, you start playing adult cricket. And then you got 37s wading in on you, like making jokes about you, and then making jokes about whatever. And you just learn. I think my dad actually said on my second day to the captain, yeah, make sure you hammer him. just to like sort of help me grow up.
Yeah.
Because I was a bit of a gobby kid. Not in a gobby sort of back of the class, but like I had a bit of confidence about me. And I think they wanted me to grow as a human being and realise, you know, you have
that
to grow up.
Even though you are the youngest child, that doesn't make you the best.
Yes, that's such a wonderful word.
It's such a youngest child syndrome of, oh, look at me.
Yeah.
Because you're also used to being the small, cute one that gets doted on.
For a little bit, yeah, but you got to remember, Catherine, my sister, 25 now, ooh, that scares me, was always tiny. So I never describe her as cute, though.
If you ever, very nice.
If you ever watched her play hockey, you know she's not cute. She's got sharpened elbows on the wing. She was a fantastic hockey player. Played regional hockey, so shout out to Catherine. But yeah, so I realised, again, going back to my first point, I realised she was good at hockey. However, I preferred the after dinners. And like, I would be more excited about like what they had for tea, if they had sausage and chips after a rugby game, than actually playing the rugby game. Didn't like rugby, but yeah, I knew what good sport looked like, and I knew what it didn't look like. So that's a compliment to my sister.
Fair enough. Yeah, so glad you've moved into, I mean, that started with NSTV.
Oh yeah, it did actually, yeah. And one thing I'll say is, it has been so nice to add that to personal statements, to add that to CVs, add it to LinkedIn. And it's made me realise media is almost like a little pie, and you've got to fill it out. You can't... Not an actual pie. You don't have to add the chicken. It's more like a pie chart. You've got to fill it out. And I feel like I'm getting closer to a nice round circle.
I mean, I think there's a reason why we see like actresses, singers, presenters, reality TV stars, like whatever kind of person is on our TVs, in our media, they branch out and do so many different things because there's the opportunities. And I mean, that to an extent, once you've made a name of yourself, you know, people are interested, people care, and that's the hardest bit to find. But I think it's really, it's a good thing to do. Even the people, you know, we see on radio, they've all got their own podcasts. And whilst they're very similar mediums,
there is a difference
and everything becomes more specialised. I mean, even if we're thinking about Greg James, for example, who you know what? Maybe he's kind of your professional radio alter ego a little bit, because he's got his daytime show, but then he's also got his cricket podcast, and very, very big into sport, the way I'd say that is kind of your two main things at the station currently. You've got your daytime show and then you've got your cricket podcast.
Yeah, I think he's also started an F1 podcast, which we don't need to worry about.
You're never doing that,
but
are
that,
you?
I see your, I love the point you make about having that sort of multifaceted, and we see it a lot with people. The person who I look up to the most is Ellis James, who's a Welsh comedian who speaks both languages, and I absolutely adore him. And if he's listening, please, please can we meet, mate? I'd buy you a pint, as John Robbins said about himself. I just think he was a stand-up comedian first. He then starts a podcast about Welsh football. He's then gone on to make documentaries about Welsh football, now does Fantasy Football League for Sky One, and does the most successful Patreon sports podcast. And like, you just live the best life. And I just would love to have that life of just having a laugh about sport and talking about sport, as well as having some really important discussions, because the Social Distance Sports Bar, which I've made you listen to a little bit, will go from talking about ghost trains in Barry Island to actual proper serious topics about period poverty in sport and what can be done about that sort of thing.
Yeah, so you very much, I mean, in the nicest way, you're not a player. You're never gonna have that sort of, like, Gary Lineker is always gonna have that in because he was a player, and you know, a lot of people we see doing the coverage have that in, but there are plenty of other people in the sports sphere. But yeah, no, there's definitely kind of, it makes sense that that would be your idol.
I would also like to preface that with, I love people like Mark Chapman. Mark Chapman's the absolute, that's the pinnacle for me, is would be getting anywhere near what Mark Chapman does, who does the Radio 5 live coverage from a Saturday, all the sports, and he just knows everything. And he also did like the NFL show, and that show for me was just unreal, because it was just when I got into American football, and it broke it down just to my level, and I just felt so welcomed by him. He was an English guy talking about it with two amazing characters in Jason Bell and Osio Manura, and he's just broadcasting levels of just, oh, that's the person I'd love to be. That's the person.
Sounds amazing. So yeah, let's start off with Sticky Wickets.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of your radio things you've got up to while you've been here at this station. We can pick some highlights, because there's, otherwise we would be here for hours. You've done a lot. But you started off with Sticky Wickets with Toby Reynolds, whose episode you can already listen to.
Yeah, listen to it. Listen to it now.
Yeah.
Oh no, finish this podcast.
Finish this episode and then go back and listen to the episode with Toby Reynolds. So, I've heard Toby's kind of recollection of how it all started, but what's your perspective of the story?
So, it was the COVID year. We'd had a full summer of COVID. It had been pretty miserable for everyone. Cricket had been behind closed doors, and you just think, this is pretty rubbish. Then I'd go out drinking on the Downs, which is a big sort of green space. And I see someone with a MCG jumper.
Not in Bristol.
Not in Bristol.
Bristol Downs. No. The Campus Downs.
Campus Downs,
lovely.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify
for
that.
For the Bristolian element of your listenership.
Yeah, well, because I got confused.
Okay. And I noticed this guy's got this MCG jumper on. And the MCG is a fantastic cricket ground, the Melbourne cricket ground, huge ground. And I'm like, right, okay, this person. Because everyone else had been been up to my text, shall we say. I'd found everyone a little bit annoying, because no one likes sport.
Because it's right in the beginning, isn't it?
Right in the beginning, yeah.
You're still trying to find your feet. And I remember you saying your halls particularly was definitely rugby boys.
Rugby boys and sailors, which was interesting.
But yeah, you were in Hugh Stew, so it is your own fault.
Yeah, definitely. But I see this boy, shaved head, and I was like, okay, this should be interesting. And we start talking about cricket. It turns out we've been to some of the same days at test matches, and we must have bumped into each other, must have walked past each other at grounds like Edgbaston and Lords. And then you think, that'd be cool. And then we both mentioned we might be doing radio. Don't think anything of it. I then get a few texts from him over the next coming months about whether I wanted to go to parties, whether I had a party on. And at that time, I'd only met this guy once. I didn't massively want to bring him, because I didn't really know him. And I think, all right, okay, he stopped texting. We then have a big URN sport meeting, and he's like, Dom, have you met Toby before? James Aldred, he was head of sport. I was like, have you met Toby before? I was like, yeah, you both want to do a cricket podcast? Yeah. And then we start texting as like mates and what we wanted the show to be. And it just grew from there. Our first episode's horrendously rushed because I needed to go for tea. And that was the first time
the problem with halls.
Yeah. Eating so early.
I've always heard it's like, what, 5 to 7 or something?
Yeah, it's like, oh no, and our house will be like, we need to get 5:45. It's like, we're not a child. Let's eat when... And we always had to go as a block for some reason. And just, oh, don't get me started. But then this friendship grows through podcasting, through England's Real Nadir, talking about things, quite serious topics in cricket. And then we start doing interviews with Ellie Oldroyd and the Birmingham Unicorns, who were the first LGBTQI cricket team outside of London. They were amazing with us. And then the brand starts growing. We start winning a few awards at the URN Awards, and we're just really proud. And then we meet for the second time ever, after all of that.
Oh, this was all online?
All online.
Because I know you tend to record your podcast via Zoom.
We couldn't even come into here. We'd done live shows and it hadn't been able. We met at going to Trent Bridge, which is the cricket ground. We went in the press box and then just spent the day just sort of hanging out when we should have been reporting. And it was great. It was great fun. We just larked about and just had a laugh. And no one really liked cricket at that stage, bar us two. And then next year comes
In the station.
In the station, yeah. Yeah, we're the only two cricket fans in the world. And we just grow and grow and grow. We've had lots of guests, lots of amazing people have come on. We've done lots of amazing live shows, had so many stupid games. We've learned what not to do, what to do. We've had a lot of opinions. Johnny Bairstow, I've won on that opinion that he's the best thing since sliced bread. Toby was very anti him. If you don't know who Johnny Bairstow is, he's a Yorkshire ginger batsman. I only liked him because he had ginger hair. And that's like, as a kid, I was like, he was like me. And I backed him, and Toby was like, no, he's not good enough to make the team. And obviously Johnny Bairstow goes on and has one of the great summers of English cricket last summer. So it was quite nice.
Not smug at all.
No.
Don't worry, I brought it up to Toby in the episode.
Did you?
It's nice that you eventually kind of actually got to be friends.
Yeah,
meeting at cricket as well. And then you went on and watched... Was it you went to cricket with his parents?
Yes, we bought test tickets again before we'd actually met. And then he got an amazing job at the 100 being a social media guy for the Trent Rockets. So he couldn't go to the day I bought tickets for with him. So his brother got a ticket. And so I just sat with Nigel and Sarah and Tom and had a lovely day. Watched England play. I think saw Virat Kohli get out, which was quite cool. Then it rained. And then my parents left the next day, which was quite cool. So I had a night in Nottingham. Watched 2 days of test cricket before, which I've never done on consecutive days, which is very cool. But that was a real nadir of English cricket, it must be said. But lovely to meet Nigel and Sarah and Tom, almost the same amount of times. We did meet a little bit more in the summer because pub started opening rule of six, and we sort of got to meet other members of URN Sport, which was quite cool.
Which is nice. You definitely found that you've enjoyed URN Sport, especially that first year. I know you guys are all still quite close.
Yeah.
Still talking about sports on the same group chat you've now had for 3 years. So.
Yeah, it's the only one like that. Like, I've been on a few of those chats. They've been on even more, and they said this is the only one that's still going.
Yeah.
It's very special.
Amazing.
Yeah. And, like, we all talk about football. There's lots of Arsenal fans on there. There's Everton fans. There's me, who's a Forest fan. Toby's on there. April's still on there. It's a really good bunch of people, and they were very special. They all took us under our wing. And when, in second year, they all left, there felt like there was a massive gap between what we had and what we lost. So James had gone, Benji had gone, all the sort of podcasts we'd had gone. All we had left was Touchdown, Over the Trent, Sticky Wickets, Chatting Like Champions, and that was it. Four podcasts.
And most of those are you.
Yeah, three of the four of those are mine. And it was like, what do we do now? But they'd left us to a point where we could continue. They'd done perfectly. The altered idea of having a rotational podcast slot, which we still have today, is superb. It means everyone can have a go. And he made essentially me and Toby in April, who's gone on to win really good awards, the Silver Award for Best Sports Programming, Kieran, just we've been able to go on from where they left us go off, if that makes sense. They were superb to us.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely. Well, I'm going to take this a little bit away from radio for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk a little bit more about what you're like off air.
Yeah, okay.
The whole premise of the podcast.
Yeah.
I want to ask you one of the questions I ask absolutely everybody.
Yes.
So you know which one of these questions is going to be coming up. I'm going to start with, so what would be your special subject if you were to go on something like Mastermind? And I'm going to say that it can't be boring and sports related.
Not sports related.
Can't be sports related or war related.
Oh, heavens to Betsy.
Because I know you. surprisingly.
Yeah.
And I know that football in the 90s, English football in the 90s specifically, mm-hmm. you'd be quite good at. Forest kind of, what, 2016 onwards?
Yeah.
Even a bit before then?
And Forest in the 90s and Forest in the Brian Clough era.
The Brian Clough era. And I know you have a love of World War II, like and a real interest. Yeah. I think saying a love is a bit of a strange way of
No, but it's what I'm most passionate about.
Yeah, you've got a real interest.
As a history student.
Yeah, I was going to say. So yeah, I'm not allowing you to pick something that is obvious.
That's very tough. It'd probably have to be Gavin and Stacey, a series I absolutely love. And like rewatch. Because I think it's the best comedy series it has some amazing comedic moments. It has some amazing time gags, but it's also a very good human story. I know it's massively over-egging, it sounds a bit pompous, but I think it's the best series.
It's very
maybe
good.
Blackadder, I think. Yeah. But Blackadder series 4 or series 2 for me.
I would say Gavin and Stacey is quite good at being kind of a slice of life show.
Mm.
It really feels very relatable.
It's not silly.
Yeah.
And like, I think the problem I have with something like Brooklyn Nine-Nine or Friends, the gags are so predictable. You just see them coming.
You're not a big fan of the American humour, are you? No.
And it's so sort of 90 seconds, bang, 90 seconds, bang, 90 seconds, bang. Whereas there's some scenes in Gavin and Stacey which are almost 2 minutes and it's nothing. It'll be like Nessa just holding a shoulder. It'll be just Bryn sorting out something. And I just love that. I think it's so relatable. I think it's more relatable than anything else on British telly. It doesn't overdo it. There's nothing that ridiculous about it.
And I do believe that you'd be quite good at it because we were watching it last night and you were saying it word for word.
I will accept that.
Every line of every episode. I think we watched like 3 or 4 episodes and every line you knew exactly what was coming.
ETA, estimated time of arrival. You have to say it.
Well, you do.
I have to say it. Yeah, that's my point.
I think that's a good shout for you.
Yeah, I think it's the non-sporty, maybe Back to the Future film. I love that film.
Just the first one, though.
Just the first one. The other two are rubbish. as much as I've tried, you just can't get behind it.
Yeah.
Maybe the Morecambe and Wise. I quite like them. They were a big show. They were essentially what we grew up watching on TV Gold with Dad. And it was like that relatable sort of character Eric Morecambe has on screen. I think a lot of people could learn from. He just listens to every word and reacts to it, which he would be a fantastic interviewer, but also as being incredibly hilarious to everyone from like the age of 8 months to like 8 years. He's just an incredibly funny man. So yeah, shout out to Eric Morecambe, who's
shout out to him, why not?
Yeah.
We talked a lot about sports broadcasting, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. We could talk about your degree, but
do you want to briefly?
I know your thoughts and feelings on it. Do you want to briefly give us a quick what you've enjoyed about your degree? What maybe module has been your favourite?
I don't think there's not been a module I've really enjoyed, to be honest. I've not really enjoyed history. But this is a shout out to everyone who maybe hasn't enjoyed their like degree. It's fine. It's the things you do around it that are good, like joining URN. And probably should mention this with the sticky wickets thing. The reason I'm still at URN, University of Reading Nottingham, is for people like Toby and James, who kept me going, and we'd like do weekly podcasts. So as much as this dissertation has been tricky, and as much as I've struggled with the modules and I've struggled with online learning, it's been the people at URN that's kept me here. So thank you to everyone, to be honest, which sounds a little bit cap in hand, but it's just not gone very well on the degree side of things, but I've loved URN a lot. So yeah, let's look at the positives, and I just wish they could maybe learn my name. I go to every lecture and everything, but I find it a bit weird coming from such a small school and then being in lectures where no one knows your names. It's a bit weird. So yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I love that they don't know my name. I love that I don't have to get involved. But then again, we do very different degrees.
See, I feel so sorry when people don't get involved. I feel so sorry for them. I'm like,
I think with my degree, they don't try and get you involved much.
Okay.
No, not really. It's more just if you have any questions,
That's
where we leave it. But yeah, if you were to go back in time, would you change your degree? And if so, what would you change it to?
I don't know what I'd change it to. That's the thing. I have to come to Nottingham, to be honest. I wanted to go for the Forest, essentially. I would just call it Forest University. I would want to go to Forest when I would like tell him about the University of Nottingham. Because as a Forest fan from Bristol, like, I just want to go Forest. And they're like, what? University of Nottingham, please. And just, it was always going to be Nottingham. And I've got no other talent when it comes to education. And don't...
Not tempted by an English degree, maybe? Do a journalism degree?
No, but like I said, if you listen to my backstory, that editor from BBC Good Food had told me no. So, kind of in that. And I don't really know what else there is.
Film or TV?
Nah, not
for Liberal it. Arts?
Oh, God. I might as well say French. I just... I wish I knew more about what I was going into, because I think they might have changed it over due to COVID, which is fair. Yeah. I was promised a lot of things that haven't been delivered. And in fairness, they've been working their best, I'm sure. The actual lecturers on the floor have been working their best, most of them, bar one, which you know about on a certain module, who Eliz from NSTV will also back me as being possibly one of the dullest human beings of all time. But there's amazing tutors out there, like Dean Blackburn, who's been so good for the Thatcherism module. So I'd just say probably choose better modules and maybe get in earlier. But there's just sometimes you couldn't get your modules due to it just filling out or not, that sort of mad. You know, when do you ever have to choose your modules?
Yeah, I choose my modules, but unlike history, there is no pressure on us.
Oh, so things would sell out.
We don't really have that as a concept because we don't have seminars.
Yeah, so things would sell out before we could... before I could get on it, and it'd be like things I really wanted to do.
And I think that's awful.
Yeah.
I really don't like that structure. And then I understand, only wanting a certain class size, but it's just not making it, like, in a way, accessible to everyone.
And it'd be on things I really wanted to do, like on World War II and Britain and World War II. And that was just a bit gutting. And I'd end up doing, what did I do? It's something about archaeology. Now, I'll say this for the bloke who did it. He was a really good lecturer and could tell I was out of my depth, and he could tell quite a few people were out of their depth, but he made it so, he tried his best.
Yeah.
So I'll give a massive shout out to him. I can't remember his name, but he was really good. So there are lovely lecturers out there, just sometimes the system's a little bit annoying.
Yeah, and I can imagine, I mean, you and I both went through COVID for our first and some of our second year as well, and that very much had a massive impact. Not having the in-person learning and then moving into in-person learning was suddenly this big shift.
And it wasn't, well, for me it wasn't, because history didn't react. They thought there was going to be another breakout. So they, for the first term of second year, was all online.
Yeah, we had that as well.
And again, if it wasn't for URN, I'm not here. Because I needed people to chat to. I needed someone like Toby, someone like Aldred, and then what became Kieran for the second year for Over the Trend. It was people to talk to about sport, about anything, because it felt so closed off, and I'm not sure how you felt, but I didn't quite like my hall mates in first year. It was, and I think first year for both of us, I think we talked about it off air a lot, it was a really tough time, and it's things like URN that keep you here.
100%. I would say in my first year, the two things that really kept me going, because I wasn't enjoying my degree at all, and I had a lot of sort of sit down chats with myself going, is it my degree or is it university that I don't like? Because, or is it COVID? If it was COVID, then the idea was pushed through. COVID will end, it'll be fine. If it was my degree, then I was like, well, then you need to change what you're doing. But yeah, radio 100% had me. That gave me something to do. So we'd have Eco Frenzy on a Saturday. So we'd have our hour slot. Sometimes it'd be live and it'd be one person in the studio, normally Georgia, because she actually knew how everything worked. And then we'd have a planning episode during the week, a planning session, sorry. So that'd be like an hour or two of our day on like a Thursday. Or we would pre-record the episode and then that would be done, you know, on the Thursday. But yeah, so there was always at least a couple hours of scheduled Teams call with people, which was really nice. And the other thing for me was volleyball. I wasn't on one of the university teams, but through going to the trials, I made friends, and going to the Just Play sessions. They were only on for about a week or two before COVID completely stopped, all sports happening. But in that time, I managed to meet the right people.
Yeah, that's so important.
I was really, really lucky that I met just, I think I met about two or three people, and they, some of them had been here the year before, so they already had a group that they liked, and then we'd go and play volleyball outside, because the rule of six was six outside, so we could go and play volleyball outside, and I was playing, you know, in the, come wind, rain, or shine.
Was it by the helicopter place?
No, it was in Jubilee.
Oh, okay. No, but that's so, like, important.
You know where the tennis courts are on
Jubilee? Oh, okay. That
just
place.
That space there. And it was really close to my halls, and yeah, I didn't, I'm like you, nothing wrong with the people in my halls. I just know enough people to have met the right people. No one who I talk to now.
Also, so much pressure on first years. Got to get a house by October. And in COVID, you were given very little options. It was really, really tricky.
I got my house in January.
Okay, well.
Yeah, no, but I was so stressed for the longest time because of the whole, I need to find people to live with.
And that really can put there's so much pressure on making friends in such a short amount of time. It wasn't fun. And I really envy you that you had a place to play sport. I put on a lot of weight because I didn't have anywhere to play sport. I'd stopped running because I felt very self-conscious about other students seeing me run.
Mm.
So I put on 2-3 stone, looked horrific and felt horrific. And then I realised the day of the Super Bowl, oh, this isn't good. I think because it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, I should start running. The next day, I start running. Obviously, this is back in Bristol because that whole term is taken out because it's January to...
Yeah, that was the December where if you didn't go home for Christmas, you weren't going... Sorry, if you'd gone home for Christmas, you weren't coming back to uni until like March, April
and
time.
I just started running again. I'd done a bit in that summer. And I think that really helped my mental health and like during COVID. I had my podcast and then I got this thing running, which made me feel fantastic, lost a lot of weight, made me feel better about myself, which I don't think off, like a lot of people sort of talk about running for mental health reasons, which it is, but also physical health. It was very good, which makes you feel better.
Yeah.
I don't think enough men talk about feeling rubbish about how they physically look. And I wanted to just have a little chat about that. And I'm glad I got it in just because I think a lot of people feel pressure, but they don't know how to express it. And there's a lot of like pressure. If you look at any sort of gym magazine, it's unattainably shiny, like cement bodies. Like, well, I'm never going to be that. I hated the gym. And it's why I sort of didn't get into sport because I felt it was all a bit laddie. But just running, I've found really, really like liberating in a way. Just being able to run, feel good about myself and listening to podcasts like this.
Well. Well, listening to me. That was very sweet. I'm glad you got that in. Glad if you want to talk about it. That's all this is for. Letting people talk about whatever they want to talk about.
Are you going to redo that?
Nope. Yeah, no, definitely. I completely agree with you. It's really hard to express, I think, to people who are now in first and second year how awful that first year was.
Oh, God, yeah.
And actually, a lot of people, I think, our age didn't express it at the time or didn't really have the friends to express it to. Because I definitely didn't have, like, I had one or two people that, again, I was very lucky to meet because some of the best people who I'm still quite close with, who I was really close with in first year. And, you know, I could express it with them, but the people you kind of saw maybe randomly once in a while, you were never going to tell them how you were feeling. And then it's years later, sitting down, having these sorts of conversations. Everyone I've spoken to, who I, you know, never would have thought, they're very sociable people. They've got a great group of friends. They still really struggled. They still found it really isolating in their first year. And I think it has bonded all of us, weirdly, in a way that we weren't actually bonded with each other, but we've all had very similar experiences that I would say, personally, I've only just started having those conversations with people.
I think I missed live sport a lot. I was feeling really low when COVID hit initially due to a lot of personal reasons. And I just started going to live sport and that was like what me and my friends would do. That was our little outlet. And then that's taken away like that. And then football and cricket and all American football is really reduced by the lack of any crowd. It just feels like you're watching a knockoff. And then I sort of think I sort of exercised that feeling of what COVID was going to football every week with my season card, which I'd been promised since year three. It was like, if you get into Nottingham, you get a Nottingham Forest season card. That was the promise. And just through walking there, walking back, realising how lucky I was to see a team on the absolute rise, going through one of the great stories of English football, I was just thinking about, this was all not here last year. All this joy I was experiencing through watching sport just wasn't here.
Yeah.
And I think I got that sort of time with mates, going to the football, going away a little bit, going to Wembley, having big teams come, having big teams being defeated. It just felt like I was finally living my university life. And I think in a way for me, that made first year a little bit more okay in my mind, because I was like, I got it all back and more in second year. And I lived my absolute best life in second year. I met you. I met so many more people who are now my friends at university and to URN. And I think second year will always hold a very special place in my heart, because I lived first year and second year all in one. And
yeah, that second semester of second year was
special.
Insanely so, because again, having lived through all that nonsense of first year, then the beginning of second year, it felt like it started to get better, but actually, as you've mentioned, we were still online learning. It was still really weird. But yeah, talking about Forest,
yeah,
I'm going to give you about 60 seconds to talk about what Forest's journey has been like for you, and them going into the Premier League. Maybe 2 minutes, because okay. I know this could be you monologuing for 2 hours by yourself, but I'd love to get a little bit of that in the podcast, which is why I'm giving you a time limit.
Okay, are you going to set a stopwatch?
No, I'm just going to watch it. Here, okay. I'll give you a 10-second warning.
Okay. So Nottingham Forest, a provisional club in second division for most of my life. Started in League One. That's the lowest point we'd ever been. That's when I go to my first game. Empty ground, rubbish. I've always been a Forest fan from Bristol, so I'm not a glory hunter. We haven't won any major trophies since 1991. We'd just had the worst time of it growing up. Hadn't beaten anyone. Hadn't been famous anymore. All my mates are Chelsea, United, or City fans, or Liverpool fans. And then suddenly I get to go to Nottingham, and Nottingham, I've always supported Forest. It's just been like what I've worked hard for. I had a picture of the City ground above my desk in like GCSEs, because that's what I was looking forward to. And Nottingham Forest are an old club. We won two European Cups, Champions League, 1979 and 1980. And we just have this beautiful sort of ambience around the club that love the past, respect the past, have a sort of 80s vibe about it, sing song from the 80s. It's just what I love. And to see them go from bottom of the Championship in 23rd, to go to the Premier League all in one season, it was just sensational. The atmospheres around the ground, there's nothing like I've ever experienced before at any other sporting event. They felt like a real community, and I felt a lot happier there. Then, like, second year, I still struggled at university, but my seat at Nottingham Forest in the Upper Brickford, 172, that's where I feel my happiest. I feel incredibly stressed there. I think watching Newcastle last night, I felt miserable there, but I've only seen 5 home losses in the league and in over 2 years. And I've just been so lucky to go there. And it's what
Sorry,
I want to do.
You've seen 5 home losses and I've been to 2 of them.
Yes. 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 And
okay.
And, okay. So we've been out of the top flight for 23 years. Now, your old listeners will know we're a huge club. And for us to be in the Championship always felt so harsh on us. We'd always just lose it in the most bizarre ways to get through, go up. And then to go up through to Wembley on our first day out in New Wembley. First day out in Wembley since 1992. It was just incredibly special. Like, it was what I wrote an article about this. My grandpa had been to Wembley to see Forest beat Luton Town in the FA Cup final 1959. My dad had been several times to see us win multiple times. And then finally I got my chance. It felt like I was living like a proper Forest life. And I'm so grateful for what Forest have done in this past 2 years, because they've been meaningless for the past 8 years.
Lovely. 2 minutes exactly.
Was it actually?
Yeah.
Timed that well.
Well, I took my little laugh out of it, out of your time, but that's a lovely way of rounding it up. And yeah, as I say, I think we could deep delve into Forest as a fan. You've got a lot to talk about, as you know, 21 years old, you've been supporting them your whole life. So that's completely fair enough. If people want to hear more, because I think your whole journey with Forest, particularly with COVID and then they're moving up into the Premier League, which has obviously been such a big deal. I think if people want to hear more about that, they should definitely read your articles on Impact.
Yeah.
I think you did a 3-part series, which they're linked somewhere. I will find a way to make it accessible.
Over the Trent Instagram, go to Over the Trent Pod, go on the Instagram stories, and it'll be Dom's articles, and it's all there.
Lovely. Good. I'm glad you've got the link nice and sorted. Right, we're going to...
Do you want to finish off with your roundup questions?
Yeah.
Sorry. I thought...
What was about to say?
Sorry.
Oh.
That was a fact.
Dom hit me. I was about to say, we're running a little bit low on time, so I would love if we could just end off with some of the questions that I ask everybody.
I'm so excited for these.
So, number one, we have to start with, what is your most iconic item of clothing?
I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Ooh, okay.
Because you go through my wardrobe like no one else does.
Yeah. There is a joke amongst me and my family that you don't own it, that you don't have any clothes anymore because they're all mine. And that if my parents ever want to buy me like a present, they should just give you a t-shirt.
I would say,
okay, your most iconic look is you're always in blue jeans.
Yep.
It's the same pair with the same belt. You've got your it's literally what you're wearing today.
I know my shirt.
I said almost. Sorry. It's almost what you're wearing today. You've got like some grey Adidas.
Gazelles.
And normally a football shirt.
Yeah.
Or a cricket shirt on the occasion. If you want to spice things up.
Yeah. With a red Adidas jacket.
Yes.
With the old logo. I'd say that's my most iconic look. Ginger hair. I've thought about this on runs. Because I've imagined this moment for years. I've always thought my ginger hair's got me a lot of places.
Yeah.
I'd say ginger hair. If you're looking out for anyone, short ginger hair, very, very basic haircut. I have not changed my haircut. I've only been to 2 barbers in my life. So yeah, I'd just say.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, that's just look out for ginger hair and football shirts.
Yeah, and it's probably you. It's probably Dom Allen. All right, final 2 questions.
Amazing.
What's your proudest achievement? And secondly, what are you looking forward to?
Proudest achievement, I was listening to your episode with Jack and he mentioned about the varsity win. I think a lot of people would expect me to say that, but there was just a lot of stuff going on at that time that it sort of took away from the moment, and sort of winning it felt a bit, okay, what now what? So one thing I felt like I could win and then did stuff with was becoming head boy. That felt, for me, I was in year 3 when they just started bringing in head boys. I just remember looking up at the stage, being on those sort of gym benches, and looking up at this 17-year-old, which was really old and like really mature, and he must have everything.
Year 3, or what, 7 or 8?
8, yeah. And thinking, I need to be that. So I stay at my school from like reception to sick form, and then I'd work really hard, done all the sort of rubbish, like open mornings, open evenings.
My favourite thing is the fact that you were in musicals.
I was in musicals
just
for 3.
Just because you wanted to be
Just because I wanted to be head boy. I was part of choirs, I'd do everything, was incredibly polite, never got in trouble. And then to get that, and then walk past all the teachers who were clapping me, was so, so special. It's a moment like I will always remember. And it's sort of out of body at times. When I remember walking down the main hall, which is a really old hall, and it's beautifully like old, like varnished and all that. And just walking down and everyone standing up to clap me was just incredibly special. And standing up and then being able to do what we did with Grace Hastings, who was amazing, amazing head girl, was just so special. And we did a lot for people with like mental health, for the sick form, organised a lot of trips. We did really well. So I'd say for me, being head boy, putting on that pin, seeing my name on a board was incredibly special. And just being able to text my mum going, I got it, for me felt like 10 years of hard work of just being on best behaviour. So that was my proudest moment, and it was just so special.
And I can imagine it's a great payoff because you kind of get to live in the moment almost for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas the varsity win, as much as it is an incredible achievement, and it was an amazing night, and I hope you enjoyed the night
as well. I loved the night, but I think you remember I was so nervous. I gave you my champagne because I couldn't drink.
Yeah.
I was so nervous about it because I just needed to win, and I think I overvalued it before. I think I sort of put all my eggs in that basket. Like, if I don't win this, I'm a failure. And then I win it and I realise I'm just the same guy.
Yeah, I think you put a lot of pressure on yourself beforehand, which then once you won it, which was amazing,
yeah.
You then kind of went...
Big shout out to Joe Banks for that, who made the entry, the audio entry.
Yeah.
Due to certain errors of timing and Apple Max. Should we have time to tell that story or not?
No, okay. I explained it all on Jack's episode. Okay. So This is me telling everyone, go listen to Jack Napton's episode if you want to hear how Dom won his student radio award, because that was a very stressful day.
That was one of the most involving, stressful days.
Entries being deleted two hours before.
Not even deleted on purpose.
No, not deleted on purpose.
Disappearing.
Yeah, not even though you'd saved it, it was bizarre. Like, entries disappearing 2 hours, 3 hours before the deadline.
I had Fly Liver doing conspiracy on me. That's what I had.
And being late to go to the airport during that time.
And the Queen had just died.
Yeah, the Queen had just died, like, the day before. Hectic time in our lives, but pulled through in the end. Cool. I think that's why also I'm so proud of it for you. I'm so proud of you because I was there for seeing all the hard work you put into varsity. And I think sometimes you got a bit wrapped up in wanting to win. Sorry. I think you talking about, you know, being proud of it. I think you got really wrapped up in the pressure of winning and wanting to win. Yeah. That you forget how much work and how much effort you've really put into varsity. And you 100% deserve that award. And the other one you got. You also got a bronze award.
Yeah, for Away Days. And then we had 10 nominations as a sector. And
As a sport.
Yeah, sorry. And April's women's sports show, which I created and helped start up, and seeing where she went with that was incredible. So she gets a silver award in that. Sport last year was just something else. 10 nominations. Everyone was really getting involved. And like you said, the preparation for varsity, there would be nights where I'd be like, I can't come over. I've got to work on this. I need to email this person. It was all very last minute. And the community that we had around it, highest amount of women we'd have on varsity coverage before, over 2 weeks.
It was almost 50-50.
Almost 50-50. And it was just something else.
It was incredible. And
the community,
someone,
I'd love to say.
Was 100%. Yeah. And as someone who participated in the coverage, everyone absolutely loved it. And everyone has just been like, when's varsity next year? Because everyone's heard such good stories about how you ran it and how it all happened, how it all came to be. Is so excited for varsity to happen.
I'd say what I'm looking forward to, which is your next question, is I'm not sure. I think... Which is also a nice thing because you're not pinning it on a day. But I think I'm looking forward to maybe a weekend where I handed in my dissertation, handed it all in. I think Hunter might have said the same
thing.
This
is a theoretical weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, where I'm just a bit free because it feels like I've constantly got this cloud over me of dissertation, coursework. And I'm looking forward to maybe my first day at hopefully Trent University or maybe Cardiff Met and starting a degree and going into journalism and just starting that journey afresh. But yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure coming on the podcast.
Not looking forward to our anniversary dinner tonight.
Well, this will go out before. I'm looking forward to that. I'm very much looking forward to going to The Alchemist with you, which I'm very should be very cute. Yeah. And then Pizza Issue, which is a very nice Italian restaurant who are make very good dough balls, I remember.
Do I have to tell people you're my boyfriend?
Imagine if they didn't realise.
No, but we haven't mentioned it.
We haven't mentioned it, okay.
Well, you got this far.
This is why I think I said second year was like that sort of golden period from like late February to April.
So basically, once you met me.
Once I met you, Forrest started playing awful. No. That sort of period I will hold incredibly dear to my heart because it was just everything was clicking into place, which I hadn't done for so long. And you come along and make everything a bit better and host an amazing podcast where I can talk about you. And that's incredibly sweet. So this is being recorded on our 1 year anniversary.
Yeah.
Where we class it as an anniversary. We just sort of became boyfriend and girlfriend. We never went on dates or anything.
No, it just kind of happened.
Which is just nice. Because I remember we watched something, I was like, about dating 2 nights ago. And it was like, I'm so glad I never had to take you on a first date.
Yeah.
We just sort of...
Because we kind of just met each other, knew each other.
Mm. Met each other through URM.
Yeah, we did.
Mm. Very cute.
Gross.
But like I'd say... Thank you so much for letting me come on the podcast. And also, massive congratulations to you on Off Air with URN. It's been superb. Your Instagram's amazing.
Thank you.
Also, the listeners have been superb. They've given... And the amount of people that want to get on is a real testament to you. And no one's thanked you enough, I've thought, on the podcast. So this is from everyone who's been on so far. You're amazing. Thank you. And that was Off Air with URN. Now I'm not doing the outro. I can't do the outro.
As you might have picked up on, this was a really special episode for me to do, and I thought it was the perfect way to celebrate the 10th episode and also the 1 year anniversary of my relationship. If you have enjoyed listening to Dom, there are many, many podcasts you should check out, but here are the most important ones. Firstly, definitely check out Over the Trent Pod. It is an absolutely great Instagram account that isn't just all things podcast. A lot of funny memes and reels on there as well. StickyWicket_URN, URN underscore touchdown, and That Thursday Show are all URN shows that you should follow the Instagram account for and find the podcast probably where you're listening to this. Separate to all that, we did mention that Dom has a non-URN based podcast with his friends from Bristol, so make sure you're also listening to nonsense_pod_FC. Follow them on Instagram and listen to their podcast for all things nonsense about football.
And if you've enjoyed listening to my voice, make sure you check out our Instagram, Off Air on URN, to stay up to date with all the episodes coming out soon.